Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
A little bit different today. Instead of just having one of us talking, we have a panel of people. You can welcome them. Come on up. And this morning, we are going to do part three in our Summer of Kindness. In Summer of Kindness, kindness is such a broad word incorporating a lot of things. And we were looking at, Jesus in Acts, it says that he went about doing good and healing all. And kindness, we are talking about, yes, acts that are kind to people. And I think one of the kindest things we could do is to share the love of Jesus to the people around us. So this summer, our series is about being a people who live kindly and share Jesus wherever we are. And so that's why you're hearing Jess talk about Summer of Kindness activations. We want to provide things as a church that we can do together, but we also want to encourage us individually to be incorporating this in our lives, that we're people. Yep, Reva needs her. Yeah. She needs her wipe. So fun. So we thought it'd be really fun on our third week talking about kindness to have the just all of us up here to unpack what does it actually mean to do the Great Commission, to step and be an evangelist and to share the good news with the people around us. Sometimes it feels like those are such big words, but what does it actually mean to do that here and now in 2025 in the Greenville area of South Carolina? And so that's what we're going to do today. I wanted to start out by even unpacking what is evangelism? Do you guys know? I mean, what are we talking about? That's why I'm like, right. I would love to kind of demystify or put a little bit of flesh or humanness in some of the words that we talk about so we maybe all have a basic understanding of what we mean. Evangelism is basically just sharing the good news. Yeah. What is the good news? Do you know that Jesus came? We just did communion. You know, he came, he made a way for us to have connection with the Father. He died on the cross, and then he rose from the grave. Do you know that one of the last things he said before he went to heaven? Like, think about it in your own life. If you knew you were going to leave your family forever, and you're like, here, I have some final words for you. How important do you think those words are to you? Like, these are the last things I want you to know. If you don't remember anything else, this is what I want you to know. The last things that he said before he went into heaven is the Great Commission. You know what it starts with? Go. Go. This is in Mark 16. You're in Matthew 28. It's go and preach the gospel is how it starts in Mark. In Matthew says, go and make disciples. So we know where to go, and then we're to preach the gospel. What's the gospel? The good news. That's what the gospel means. And the good news is about who he is and what he's done for us. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And really, my hope is that we just get his heart and that whatever we do comes out of that place. And all the people up here are brilliant. You probably know Mr. Adam Acosta, who we love having Adam and Shana here. And this is Benjamin Moore. I feel famous just being by you. Benjamin Moore, who's up here. And then Miss Reva Henry, our worship leader. But I wanted to start out and ask you, I wanted Ben to start out just because he's maybe one that you might not know yet. And I'd love for you to take a little bit of time, Ben, for us to get a context for who you are. But why is evangelism important?
Well, it's important because we're commanded to do it. But I think it's important to me because I would probably say that it's why I was put on earth. And so just quickly defining evangelism for me, evangelism is an overflow of your heart when you're just in love with Jesus. I think evangelism is a byproduct of adoring and worshiping Jesus. It's not something that we're doing. It's not an activity. It's actually who we are. And so just for the quick context, I gave my life to Jesus on a mission trip probably 15 years ago now at this point. So we were headed out into the bush of Kenya for about 4 months. Gave my life the night before we left.
Wait just a second. You were going on a missions trip, but you didn't know God?
It's complicated.
Okay. That's awesome.
I was searching.
Okay.
I was searching.
See, I'm learning stuff here too. Okay.
Yeah. So spent my first 4 months of knowing Jesus just in the bush of Africa, preaching Jesus, and we just saw amazing things, saw God, lots of healings, salvations. We had bounties put on our head pretty quickly for sharing Jesus, and it was just a really cool experience. And then spent pretty much the first, we didn't know any better. I highly encourage you to just give your life to Jesus and go for it. Spent our first two-ish years overseas, and then my wife and I actually landed in Southern California leading a ministry called Jesus Burgers. It's a really cool ministry. So UCSB, long story short, is the number one party school in the country. And so every weekend you would see anywhere from like 5,000 to 7,000 kids walking up and down this one street, and they were all looking for a good time. And so our ministry has a house right in the middle of that street. And we would basically throw a big party every Friday night, and the city would come, we would feed them. If they needed somewhere to sleep, they could stay there. If girls weren't feeling safe, we would oftentimes walk or even carry them back to their apartments. And then I would lead teams, we'd kind of call them strike teams, or we would go and we would jump into house parties and just start praying for people, jump over the walls, get in there, lay our hands on people, pray for them, see if we could get the microphone from the DJ and just start talking about Jesus, just whatever we could do. But really just encountering people who were kind of headed one direction, we wanted to grab them and really tell them about Jesus. And then, so that was a lot of intentional evangelism. How I think about evangelism is relational, accidental evangelism, and then intentional evangelism. So that was a lot of intentional. And now I have a normal job. I have three kids, so a 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old. So it's a lot of accidental evangelism nowadays where it's, you know, praying for a kid at QT the other night or praying for someone at the grocery store, at the neighborhood pool. It's just, as we're doing normal life, we're just encountering people.
That's so good. So we're talking about why evangelism, but how important is it? And I'd love to ask as well, if Adam or Reva want to answer this, how it's looked like in your life as well, evangelism. He just broke down the accidental, intentional, and relational. There's a lot of different ways that we can be light and share Jesus with those around us. And so want you to speak to it.
So I didn't grow up in like Christian culture and church culture. This push to go and share the gospel was never like in the DNA of who I was, because I didn't grow up in that. I was, however, approached by a lot of Christians that did that. And for me, it didn't work as a non-Christian. What did work for me was I saw somebody that I looked up to living a life like Jesus. And I'm like, there's something about that that I respect and I want to know more. And so for me, a lot of my approach, I never felt the pressure to go. But what I did have was, when I got saved, it changed everything about me.
Yeah.
It became my life. So it felt unnatural to be in conversation and not talk about Jesus. When someone was asking about my life or getting to know me, I wasn't trying to get them saved. I was just sharing about who I was. And for me, the goal wasn't necessarily to get them saved. It was asking the question, how can I treat them the way Jesus would treat them? That was kind of my approach. It was very much the relational piece for me.
That's so good. Reva, how about you?
I'm going to come from a very different angle and say that evangelism is not something that has been active in my life. And you're like, what? Mm. Yes. Okay. When I first moved here, I did this thing. I don't want to say the name because it's kind of like it's an apartment ministry, I'll say it that way. And we were asked as a part of the apartment ministry to have conversations with people, invite people to church, and to share the gospel. And it kind of felt a little weird in one sense, only because it was like a metric base. You had to have so many a month. But when you started to actually go through the training and do all the things, it was just what Adam was saying. It was like, how can you actually not talk about who God is in your life when he is such a huge part of your life? And so then the kind of the stigma of it became less, because it was more oh, I can just have a conversation with this person right here, and I'm a worship pastor. Like, what do you do for a living? You're just getting to know someone. That's absolutely going to come up in conversation. And so then I learned that naturally, as I'm just talking with people, those types of things, obviously talking about the Lord and what God has done in your life, can easily flow out of conversation to where it wouldn't feel forced or it wouldn't feel invasive as well. And so I say that it wasn't an active part of my life. And when I did that apartment life ministry, I just told you the name. When I did that ministry, it was actually very convicting because it made me realize how much, really honestly, time that had been wasted, but how often I had not opened up and shared anything about God with people that I had interacted with on a daily basis. And so it was more of a convicting thing for me in regards to evangelism and how it is a command, but how it should be active in my everyday life.
I mean, this is a great segue as well. We read it in the Bible, but looking back in our own lives, when's the last time you actually shared Jesus with someone around you? Yeah. And I guess that could look like a lot of different things too. So the question I have is, why don't we? Mm-hmm. Maybe you ask, why don't you? Reva probably shared a little bit about why you didn't.
Yeah, I didn't because I didn't feel like I knew enough. Mm. You know, I mean, and this is the girl who's been to school, who reads the Bible, does all the things, been in church my entire life.
I know, you know everything.
Been in church my entire life. But there was something about that word evangelism that just made it like, ooh, this is scary. Yeah. You know, and you felt like I had to be, like, you know, bless our brothers and sisters that have the microphones on the corner and want to, they can talk for hours. You know, I was like, I don't know if I can talk for hours, Jesus. But realizing I had this picture of what it looked like in my head versus what it looks like just from a natural overflow from my life. Yeah. So I felt like I needed more tools when in actuality, I had everything that I need simply because I had a relationship with Jesus and I had my testimony.
Yeah, I
kind of want to tag on to that. I think for me, like, I never feared it because I've actually never given, like, an altar call, if that makes sense. I never had that inclination to go and say, hey, do you know Jesus? What I did have a fear of, though, is actually talking to people. And one of the things that I found helpful that I would actually coach our dancers forever ago, just in growing in general, is that when the desire is strong enough, the fear no longer matters. And so this whole thing about, like, it should be the overflow of your life. When you desire Jesus strong enough, there's something about looking into his eyes long enough that you begin to see the world through his eyes. You begin to see people through the way that he sees them. And how could you not love people from that perspective?
Yeah. So challenges why we don't. I think another reason that it is challenging is because it's controversial. And if you don't like conflict or you know it's going to be a conflict, like you can say, oh, I love golf. Or people are like, that's great, good for you. And then you say, oh, I love Jesus. And then you might get a different reaction. It might be different in South Carolina than it is in California or depending on who you're talking to. I know for me, we're in airplanes a bit and you sit down and you have a hi, how are you? Good. If they talk anymore, because now people have stuff in your ears. But usually if you look at them, you're like, hi, it's good to see you. And then some people get chatty and they're like, oh, well, where are you going? And usually it's like, oh, we're going to a conference or we're coming, doing something with church or people, serving people. And then it comes up, they're like, well, what do you do for work? And then inevitably, like, well, how should I say this? Oh, I just work with people, love people. Or like, no, I work at a church, I'm a pastor. And often that's when everything changes. And I know, like, if they can see me as just a person, we're all good. But as soon as they know, like, I'm a pastor, this happens actually not just in California, but a lot of places. The energy of the conversation just whoomp. Yeah. And I'm like, hi, remember me? I was nice. So I know, I mean, I know why someone might not want to share the name of Jesus, because sometimes people, for many different reasons, shut down or the course changes. But for me, one of my biggest motivators is I love people. Yeah. And if I can tap into that, I'm like, I will even, and sometimes you can just feel and read people. I don't know how you are, but I could be sitting next to someone and I can feel what's inside of them or on them, whether it's anxiety or depression or joy or whatever it is, or overwhelmed. And so if I'm chatting with someone, I love to be able to just ask, can I pray for you? Or are you okay? So in that, I would love to ask for you guys, when we're talking with people, what is like the doorway? You're always looking for doorways into people's lives and hearts. What are doorways that you guys look for when you're with people? Ben, you're smiling.
Yeah, it might be controversial, but my doorway is if they're alive, then I think it's a good time to share.
I mean, you have a really big open door.
Yeah, the door is wide open.
You're always raising from the dead, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And even if they're dead, maybe there is an opportunity. You're right. Thanks, Adam. I appreciate that. Coming from Bethel, too, I just think we can over-spiritualize it and overcomplicate it a little bit where, you know, I love treasure hunts. I love all the fun prophetic things we do. But I have so many memories of us doing a treasure hunt where we're, you know, we're waiting for a guy with a red shirt and a striped hat and 50 people walk by. And I'm like, oh.
Okay, you made reference to something a lot of people might not know what you're talking about.
Sure. So treasure hunts where we're asking God to give us, just give us guidance. Who should we speak to? Who should we interact with? Just listening for the heart of God, which I love. I champion that. I just think let's not miss people in the midst of listening to God, if that makes sense. I just don't want 50 people to walk by me while I'm waiting to listen for the person. So I just think it can get overcomplicated. Love the person in front of you. Yeah. If you're in front of me, then the door is open to share.
Wow. That's so good. Adam, what about you? Like when you're talking to people or you're in a situation, what are you looking for? Is there like a door handle or what do you do? Yeah. How do you navigate that?
So actually, I love this phrase that Eric's been going after, that beauty can save the world. And the reason why I love that is because I believe that beauty is the evidence of God. And so whenever I can find beauty in somebody, then I can find God in them.
Oh, wow.
So for me, I don't feel like I have permission until I can find beauty in that person or that culture. So an example for this is I believe that the LGBTQ community, for example, is there's something beautiful about them. There's something that I can learn from them. And if that offends you, then you probably shouldn't go and try to minister to them because you haven't found the beauty yet. So for me, I have to find beauty in a person or a culture before I begin to approach them, because otherwise I might bring an agenda that isn't actually coming from the Lord.
People are probably not getting past your last statement about LGBTQ people could be beautiful.
I can learn from them. They are actually in a very amazing community that I can learn a lot from, that we can all learn a lot from.
Can we all agree that we are made in the image of God? All humans. No matter what our choices are. And that's what I hear you saying, Adam, is you're connecting to the image of God in them.
Yep.
I love that. So beautiful. So good. I would love to talk about performance. Performance and sharing the good news. That's something that I see anytime we have an agenda. Is there any really driven people here? I am very driven. I will always work hard to finish what I started. Yeah, I've been working in my yard a lot this week, and it doesn't matter how hot it gets, I'll keep going until I'm done. If you give me a list of things, I will work my hardest to get it done. I was a really good student because I will get it done. But when we're following God, sometimes that actually gets in the way of following him, when everything becomes an agenda, and especially if you put a human in that way. The human in the way of an agenda. It's like, which one are you following? Was it the agenda or the human? So I would love to even just talk about performance and what does success look like with what we're talking about, sharing Jesus.
Success for me looks like obedience. Like simply of saying yes and actually stepping out and doing it. I feel like I was reading 1 Corinthians 3, And Paul was talking about, you know, there's some that plant the seed and there's some that water it. And so I feel like sometimes in that performance piece, it's like, if I didn't get them to this point, I failed. But maybe you were meant to be the person that actually planted the seed. Yeah. Wow. And maybe you don't know who's coming behind you to actually water that seed. Because God is obviously the one who actually is doing the conversion and bringing them to himself. So my success is I was obedient. That's what it is for me.
Yeah, I'll hit on the performance part. I think it's been the biggest learning and relearning I've had is understanding that I'm at peace with God. It's Romans 5:1 says that I'm at peace with God. And I don't know if I would have ever consciously said it, but subconsciously I had this idea that God loves me more when I pray for more people.
Yeah.
And he loves me less when I pray for less people.
Wow.
And so we would see these nights where we had people being baptized in the ocean, people being healed, crazy things. And that meant that God really loved us.
Wow.
And then we'd have nights where I got punched in the face one night sharing Jesus. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe God is actually mad. But the reality is that if I pray for more people, he still loves me and I'm at peace with him. If I don't pray for anyone for the rest of my life, he's actually incredibly in love with me and I'm at peace with him.
Yeah.
And from that, it pushes me and motivates me to go. I think people will land on that truth. But if that truth causes you to do nothing, I think that's maybe not truth. That truth should actually cause, when I know that I'm at peace with God, it causes me to love people. It pushes me outwardly. So just, I think, deconstructing this idea that he loves me more when we do more, he loves me less when I do less. And just, I think he just loves us.
Yeah. That feels like a really big truth in any area that we're talking about. What if we just knew that he loved us?
So good.
That it wasn't for works that we do any of this stuff.
Yeah, I think from a metrics perspective, I stopped counting a win when I got somebody saved. I started counting it a win when I loved them the way Jesus did. And I want to kind of go back to what you were saying about some that plant, some that water. I want to share a story about a neighbor of mine that moved in, I don't know, it was probably 6 months ago or something like that. And same thing, just conversation like, hey, well, how'd you end up in Greenville? Like, well, I helped to start a church. I'm like, oh, okay. And so I didn't really push into that very much. I just kind of let it sit. And one of the things that I've learned, I've had this incredible opportunity over the past, I don't know, decade of my life to really get involved with the like you call them the lost or whatever, the people that really don't know the Lord and living very, very different lifestyles. And so I've learned that in those moments, sometimes it's better to create space than fill it with your own thoughts of who God is. Because God can fill that space a lot better than I can.
Wow.
And so I just left it be, right? And then I don't know, it was maybe a month or so later, he was like, hey, you want to go grab something to drink? So I'm like, sure. So we go to this restaurant, and we're hanging out, and we're just talking, and he was like, I actually need to ask you a question. I'm like, great. He's like, you said you started a church or helped to start a church. I'm like, yeah, that's I did. He goes, my son came home the other day with the Bible, and we're not spiritual, we're not Christian, we're nothing. He was like, I don't know what to do with this. Can you help me? And so I got a chance to share my testimony. He started asking me about how I began to know the Lord. And I had a chance to share my testimony. And he starts just bawling. He's just like breaking. And he's feeling God in this moment. Had I pushed it earlier, we may have missed that moment. Sometimes it's better to create that space and let God fill it. And then when the moment's right, he will call you to go and do what he's asking you to do.
Wow. So beautiful and powerful. Yeah, thank you. A lot of stuff you guys are talking about requires some level of trust in God, though. This is for the list-oriented people like myself. Like, we're driven. We want to make this happen. This is such a nuanced thing to actually trust in God of what he's going to do and then what part am I responsible for. So, so beautiful. What about the role of, like, we have different personalities, all of us. We're made in his image, but he's so big that we all reflect a different aspect of the Lord. We have different personalities in that he gives gifts. And we all carry different gifts as well. And then we have callings and anointings on our lives. What does this look like in the form, like what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Like what's okay? Is it all good? Does it need to look like a certain way? Would love to hear. Reeve, you're laughing at me over here.
I'm laughing because I just heard the phrase, do you, boo. But like in that sense of like, you are who you are. God created you the way that he created you. He wired you the way that he wired you. And that if you're going out and you're sharing your story, you're sharing your testimony, God doesn't want you to pretend to be like anybody else. And it's like he can't bless who you pretend to be. You know, he can't bless that time because you're trying to wear somebody else's shoes. And so if I wear my own shoes in that moment, then that moment has already been crafted for me to speak into that person. Like, I feel like even for, like, Adam's neighbor, I don't know if anybody else could have ministered to him in that particular way. But it was because it was Adam, Adam's shoes, Adam's story, Adam's testimony, that particular situation aligned the way that it aligned. Yeah. So if Adam would have tried to be like anybody else in that moment, I don't know if it would have had the same outcome. So do you, boo. That's all I got to say.
So the whole power of let your light shine, it's really important that we just give what we have. And that's what Jesus always works with. When he multiplied the fish and the loaves, it started with, well, what do you have? Give him what you have. And he took it, he broke it and multiplied it. But no one else can give what you have. And that's why sometimes I feel so sad when we love people, we admire them, we see what their light is so great, that sometimes we're like, gosh, how can I be like that? And I love to be inspired by, encouraged by each other, but I feel so sad when we think what we have isn't good enough because it doesn't look like somebody else.
So good.
Like what Reva does, she rocks Reva land so good. Enough to where I'm like, oh, I wish I could be like that. And I'm like, well, for me to actually be a sweet fragrance to the Lord, I have to figure out what he gave Candace.
So good.
And I have to give that and not just be okay with it, but I think coming to a level of enjoyment with being who he's created me to be.
So good.
And loving people with what I have. And so that's one thing we just want to encourage and give permission to all of us to let our light shine and to do that in whatever context we're in. And I want to kind of wrap up with this, kind of finish. We live in the Southeast in the United States, which is such a gorgeous, lush area. I love so much about here. But I'd love to talk a little bit about the context and the cultural space that we live in, because every space is different. Every culture is different. And I think part of our opportunity is to understand the context that we live in, the relationships that we're in, to see what does it actually look like to love people well. And Ben is one of our truest locals on this panel. He has lived here longer than 4 or 5 years. And I would love to hear a little bit about from you, Ben, just the context. South Carolina, a Pew Research in 23 and 24 said that 77% of South Carolina say that they are Christian. And it could be changing. I've heard different reports, but that's the context that we live in. In Greenville, there's so many people moving. Look at all of us from other places. So that could be changing, but the context is very Christian where we're at. There's churches. You stand on almost any given corner, and you can see a church almost. We were out in Southern California in the end of May, and I'm like, I forget. There's not churches or multiple churches on every block. But that's just a normal context here, which I actually think is really cool. But it does set a little bit of different landscape. Yeah. And I was just curious, in that landscape, talking about what does it look like to share Jesus with those around you? Ben, is there anything that you would even share with us growing up here, living here, about the cultural context here?
Speaking for all of us Southerners, so if you're also a local, just give me some grace. Yeah, we found living, so I'm born and raised here. My wife is born and raised in California, so we kind of have a mixture of both worlds. I don't know if my time in California, we ever had someone say no to, like, hey, can I tell you about Jesus? Can I pray for you? In the South, it's the majority of the time. People get really just kind of weird. And so I think religion is typically a private discussion in the South, where this is something that you discuss in the privacy of your own home after you've had deep relationship. It's not just something we talk about on the street. It's something that we get to know each other about. There's a lot of relational equity that you have to earn. And I think that when you talk about Jesus is an institution here, not necessarily a person. And I think there's good and bad there. When you're saying, like, hey, can I tell you about Jesus? Most people in the South will reference the institution that they grew up in, whether that's a Methodist church, a Baptist church, wherever it was, where we're trying to tell them about a person, they're hearing about a structure, a building, a hurt, an institution. But I think there's a real craving for authenticity because of that. I think we've done the religious ball game for so long where we're like, we're all Christian, but none of us are Christian. Now there's this real craving for, like, but if you have something better to offer us, will you please? I mean, that's how I met Jesus, was I went on this trip and I was like, I've experienced this for 21 years. There's got to be something more. Someone handed me an authentic Jesus and I said, yes, I'll take that. So, yeah.
Wow, that's so powerful. You know, we're talking to the context here. If we're going to share Jesus here, then we can't necessarily assume that they don't know Jesus. You can't assume that they know him, or maybe they know church. There is a lot of nuance to what does it look like to love people well?
Yeah.
And like just even saying that statement, what does it look like to love people? I think the starting place is just beginning to see them. Like, are we aware of who we're talking to?
Yeah.
Because I think we get used to, I could give you, here are the 5 points to lead someone to the Lord. But if you don't know who you're talking to, that's going to change greatly. When moving here, one of the biggest things I've encountered is people who've been hurt in the church.
Yeah. Yep.
More than people who don't know God at all, they know at least enough to be hurt. Yeah. And it makes me feel sad. And I'm like, oh gosh, I feel so sad that we have hurt you. And I say we because what is the church? Yeah. It's just made up of people. So somewhere along the line, they got hurt by people who were following, doing their best to follow Jesus, is my hope. And so what does that look like to share Jesus's love there versus someone who maybe they're curious about, they, I don't know anything about Jesus, but I'm curious. When I got saved in sixth grade, and I was in sixth grade and I went to a church because my mom made me go. And at the end, they asked, it was like a Girl Scouts thing for Christian girls. And they asked, you know, who wants to know Jesus? And I just remember raising my hand because I'm like, I would want to know Jesus. But I didn't know really what, I mean, why wouldn't you want to know Jesus?
Yeah.
So I said yes, and everything changed instantly. But context-wise, I didn't actually have a ton of context besides God bless America or like, in God we trust. I don't, my family loved America. I don't know. And I know in God we trust, and I pledged allegiance, one nation under God. So that was probably my reference point.
Yeah.
But I was like, sure, I would want Jesus, or I think so. So I would love to just bring in the factor of love. And I, of, no matter what we do, is anyone perfect in this room? Please come up here.
My wife is.
I have met a lot of amazing, gifted, talented people, but I have yet to meet one perfect person. All that to say is when we're talking about this big thing, and even Reva spoke to it, like, what's the biggest challenge in this? Oh no, what if I make a mistake? Or what if I can't? Like, what if we just turned it around and said, what would it look like to love? And what do I have to give? And Lord, we are okay with what that looks like. And then add humility of like, I'm just going to do my best, and I'm going to do my best to look to him and listen to what he's saying. But in this, I would want to pray that God would expand our love. I really believe that that's the foundation, the beginning and the end of what we're talking about. Is anyone need more love?
Yeah, come on.
We do. We do. We more than any knowledge that we need more love. More love to be able to be loved because it transforms us. But also, I think love is the one thing that allows us to see each other. And to see each other in the best, probably truest light is when we're partnering with love. Billy Graham, who is from really close to this area, from Asheville, I love this statement. He says, it's the Holy Spirit's job to convict, God's job to judge, and my job to love.
Come on.
I'm like, do we know our job in all of this? That makes it so easy. My last thing is I just want to ask, is there any final thoughts that you would want to leave people with? Any encouragements?
Do it.
Go.
How big is the door, Ben?
Alive and dead, I guess. Alive and dead.
Oh. No, I think, I mean, just to echo what Candace says, like, love people. That is the metric. Like, the metric is, can I love people the way Jesus did? whether they get saved or not, whether they decide to follow Jesus or not, whether you're planting the seed or watering or, you know, or reaping the harvest, that's for him to figure out. It's just our job to go and love people.
Ditto. I mean, no, seriously. Your story, your testimony is powerful.
Wow.
It's beautiful. It entails everything that you need. And obedience is a beautiful thing. That's all I got.
I love the power of testimony because we're to go out and preach the gospel, to go make disciples. But our testimonies are basically what happened when we encountered the good news.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what happened in my life. Everything changed. It's my favorite thing to share because it's the truest thing and it's only what I know. So if I'm going to give what I have, it's an easy, authentic place to start.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And what are we all looking for? Something real.
Yeah, come on.
And so whatever your story is, whether you were raised in church or raised in, I don't even know.
The hood.
The hood. Or came to know God on a missions trip. Like, that we all have different stories. I do know that we're called to be and to go, that we're called to let our light shine. So the best thing I know is let's get good at knowing what we have to give and what is this light if I was going to give it permission to shine. And then let love be our motivator. Why don't we stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.